Happy Monday, everybody. Look, let's put Saturday in the past. It's in the rearview mirror. We're not talking about the Packers. We're talking about the Brewers, and we're talking about Hall of Fame. Don't go anywhere. This is Locked On Brewers.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi again, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio, along with Vinny Rotino. Thanks for making Locked On Brewers your first listen of the day. As we mentioned, look, Saturday was a tough day, but here we're talking about baseball. We are your release from everything that happened up at Lambeau last week. Vinny, I know you were crushed, but we're here to talk about the Hall of Fame. We're talking about Mailbag Monday. There's a lot to get to here. Of course, Vinny, ex-big leaguer, now turned broadcaster. Myself, I'm the researcher and statistician for Valley Sports Wisconsin, and four-year minor league baseball broadcaster myself. So we're here to talk about the Brewers, okay? But I'll give you the floor briefly here, Vinny. I know Saturday here. I want to set the record straight. Oof. I am not a Packer fan. I am not from Wisconsin. I am not from the Midwest. I do understand the impact of Saturday. So I want to give you the floor real quick at the start and say your piece.
If you don't mind, yeah. I mean, I really need to get something off my chest. The fact that they scored 7 points right in the first drive, TD, first drive, and then all of a sudden 3 points the rest of the game. I get it. I do get that the special teams is awful. I do even understand. I read something today that they had actually 10 men on the field for that final field goal by Robbie Gould. And then, but they only scored 3 points after that first drive. They have Aaron Rodgers. They have the best quarterback, I think, ever, right? I get it. Tom Brady, 17 Super Bowl championships. I get it. But I think Aaron Rodgers is the most talented.
A little fewer than 17, but yes.
Yeah. He's got like 6 or 7. I have no idea. I'm losing count. I get that part of it. But Aaron Rodgers is the most talented quarterback I have ever seen. I think a lot of people have ever seen. The fact that he can do things with a football that people have never seen that before, what he's able to do with a football and manage the offense, and then all of a sudden they only score 3 points. That was just tough to watch. I mean, yes, my heart was ripped out of my chest. I thought they were going to win the Super Bowl this year, and now we may have Jordan Love next year. All right, that's my piece, okay. which isn't good, but okay, go ahead.
It's all good. And admittedly, we're actually recording this kind of idiotically in the middle of this insane Bills-Chiefs game right now, and Gabriel Davis just scored again. This is his fourth touchdown, so I've got one eye on that, my left eye, but the other eye right here on the camera, so maybe we'll break it to you live, since obviously you'll be listening to this and you already know the results, so you'll hear our valid reactions to it. But hey, we are talking Mailbag Monday today, and we are also talking Hall of Fame. Now, we're going to break down the Hall of Fame structure and the way things work. Maybe if you're not really familiar, it's going to be a full workshop on how the Baseball Writers Association of America actually comes to the conclusion of the Hall of Fame, which, by the way, if you're listening to this on Monday, it will be released tomorrow night on MLB Network. So there's actually some baseball news to talk about with the Hall of Fame ballot being released tomorrow. And then also, we're going to have our own ballots to talk about too, Vinny. I hope you enjoyed going through this process and learning a little bit about the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I still really don't know, and I'm hoping that you can actually educate me on the process, on the whole voting process. It's a little bit confusing to me. I know we'll get into that. And I'm a player of 14 years and a scout for 4. I mean, I've been in the game for almost 2 decades, and I still don't quite get the whole Baseball Writers Association, how they come to their voting process, the whole process. So I'm looking forward to hearing that from you. But yeah, this was a lot of fun to do, and the exercise to go through and voting myself, I thought it was a lot of fun.
All right, let's get to our Mailbag Monday questions. So we got a handful, including one carryover from last week that we failed to get into the show. So my apologies to Greg, who asked this question specifically to you, Vinny, asking about memorabilia. Obviously, you've got the jerseys behind you if you're watching on YouTube, or if you've never seen any of our clips. Vinny's got this incredible collage of jerseys behind him. Of Team Italy jersey, Brewers jerseys, a Cleveland jersey. I mean, the list goes on. You obviously kept your jerseys, but is there any other memorabilia, mementos, little trinkets that you have kept throughout your career?
Not really. I had gobs and gobs of equipment. I had probably 20 catcher's bags full, which are basically large duffel bags full of equipment, between all my helmets and bats and spikes. People don't – and batting gloves. I had so many batting gloves you wouldn't even believe. My wife ended up selling most of the stuff on eBay, or I gave it away to some kids in town here. But what people don't understand is that once you get to the big leagues, they give you so much stuff, and big leaguers don't really need all that stuff because they make a lot of money. I never made that kind of money, but I just want to point out the fact that when you're in the minor leagues, you're struggling for every penny you're scraping together. Yeah, I mean, and you understand that lifestyle, Dom. I mean, in rookie ball and in A ball, they gave us a large jar of peanut butter and a tongue depressor and two loaves of bread, and that was our spread. Okay, and so we lived that way for a couple of years, and I played with holes in my shoes, for crying out loud, in A ball, trying to make ends meet and live out my dream. But then when you get to the big leagues, they just give you everything, and they give you bags and bags of stuff. So I had a ton of that stuff at the end of the day. At the end of my career, and then my wife ended up selling most of it. I do have some stuff. I got some signed balls from some guys. I wasn't a big memorabilia guy, though. I have a Craig Biggio jersey, which that guy's a grinder, and I thought of myself as a grinder, and so that's the one jersey I do have. But other than that, I didn't keep much.
Hall of Famer, Craig Biggio. Hall so you didn't famer. Keep the jar of peanut butter?
No, I did not. I did not.
Totally understood. So that was a good question from Greg. Now let's get to a few more here from this week before we get into our Hall of Fame segment of the day. The new coaching staff came, and this question came from Michael. Any thoughts on the new coaching staff being finalized for the 2022 season? This happened last week, over the later part of the week, that the two new additions were made official because Steve Carsey announced he was stepping down as the bullpen coach, going to spend more time with his family. So we wish all the best to Steve hanging out with his family. You can always respect that, and family's always coming first. So congratulations to Steve on 3 years with the Brewers, and we'll wish him well. In his replacement will be Jim Henderson, who was the AAA pitching coach in Nashville this past year. And also, Matt Erickson has been added to the roster. Matt Erickson, a.k.a. the mayor of Appleton, his hometown, Appleton, Wisconsin, now coming down from the Timber Rattlers and helping out as an assistant hitting coach and the infield coach for the Brewers coming up in 2022. These are the two main names as far as the physical coaching staff goes that complete the staff for Craig Counsell and company. Otherwise, everything else is the same. I'll leave it totally open to you, Vinny. I know you know these guys. Well, what are your thoughts on these promotions for these two?
Awesome. Baseball guys through and through. But also, these guys understand the new, kind of the technology side of the game, that data and the analytics side of the game. These guys bring a perfect blend of both of that, the baseball side and the data analytics side. And that's what the Brewers have done a really good job of doing is bringing on coaches that can get buy-in and trust from players. And then, obviously, they have to know the new age stuff because this stuff works, right? The new data, the new analytics. They have open-minded coaches that understand all this stuff and can implement the stuff when needed, but also they still have that baseball side of things, right? And so that's super important, and I'm glad that the whole staff is made up of a whole collection of guys that think that way. And Matt Erickson and Jim Henderson are just going to add to that collection.
I'm very excited for them, and especially two guys that not only made it to the big leagues, but played for the Brewers, albeit brief, but they, you get to say that, hey, you've got a ton of this staff played for the Brewers, which I just love that family tradition that the Brewers have going on, and you're hiring a guy from Appleton. I mean, that's the coolest part, I think, for Matt Erickson, and he talked about it in a piece with Tom Hargercourt, who, oh, by the way, shout out to Tom, announcing his retirement this past week, but saying, like, look, family's not going to have to move. I get to drive down, find a place down here in Milwaukee. I'll just have to, put some more miles on the car. And that's the dream come true right there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, Appleton's not that far away. And Matt Erickson has been a Brewer. He bleeds blue and gold, right, for many years now. At this point, it's been almost 2 decades that he's been the manager of Appleton, and he's done a phenomenal job. How many prospects has he developed and sent through to the big leagues? Again, well-trusted, well-admired coach within the organization, and now he finally gets a chance to make an impact at the big league level. I'm really happy for him.
Fantastic stuff. And also, real quick, if you want to shed light on, with Jim Henderson becoming the bullpen coach replacing Steve Carsey, obviously some, you know, most people don't play to a level that they have a bullpen coach. Maybe they played high school ball and they only have a pitching coach. Can you help differentiate for folks who don't realize the difference of roles between your regular pitching coach and also your bullpen coach?
Yeah, so the bullpen coach is kind of seen as like the assistant pitching coach. Right. That's kind of how they view that guy. But at the same time, usually those guys are really, really good at game planning for relievers that are up that night. So let's say a guy threw like three nights in a row, that guy's going to be down. But the other guy that's ready and fresh and might come into the game, he's always kind of alerting these guys to when, you know, the matchup that he might see is coming up. So, hey, might want to think about getting loose, start stretching out. You got, you know, Tyler O'Neill and Nolan Arenado coming up next inning, two righties, right? So that's kind of his role. But also they're really good now at understanding pitch characteristics and pitch design and all that stuff, as does Chris Hook and the pitching coach. So it's like an assistant pitching coach. Do you see it differently, Dom?
No, I agree entirely. Also, it also gives the bullpen guys somebody to talk to when the main pitching coach might be busy, but the pitching coach is obviously helping out the entire staff. But you mentioned something, matchups, because the pitching coach has so much on their plate already with the starter scouting report. The bullpen coach, just like you said, has already highlighted maybe spots that can be exposed in the other side's lineup with your personnel, right? Maybe there's a stretch of three lefties in a row. Maybe traditional thinking would think, all right, let's have the lefty up, but maybe the Brewers would be thinking, oh, to have Devin Williams up with his changeup. So that kind of thing is where it comes in. So I agree with you there. I'm very excited to see what these two guys bring. As we get to our next couple questions here, we are missing the greatest football game ever right now, Vinny, because the Bills took the lead. Patrick Mahomes had 13 seconds to get in the field goal range, and he did. And Harrison Butker hit a 49-yard field goal to tie it, and they're going to overtime. So we're recording a podcast. Let's get this over with, man. It's crazy. But anyways, our next question came from Phil, and this is kind of a little heavier and leads into our Hall of Fame discussion, too, in a little bit, that local media is discussing betting. DraftKings window is present at Wrigley Field. The Chicago White Sox have a presenting sponsor in PointsBet. The point is, why is Pete Rose not eligible for the Hall of Fame? I will start with this first. Pete Rose, obviously the all-time hits leader. He was a manager for the Cincinnati Reds, also notably bet on baseball while he was the manager. Now, it is rumored to have been said that he never bet on against his team. You can't really prove that at this point, given it's been so many years later. I think, personally, it opens up a double-edged sword. While I personally think Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame as a player, and you can separate... it is alleged that he bet as a player too, but 4,000 hits, man. You know, Pete Hutt, I mean, he was just one of the best hitters obviously he had the most hits, but just pure hitting, just pure hustle. It was so much fun to look at old highlights of him. That being said, with sports gambling becoming so prevalent in today's world, it becomes a double-edged sword, right? If you let Pete Rose in, who admitted to gambling when it was illegal, and you now have it, quite frankly, easier than ever to gamble on sports, especially as professional athletes. I know, they'll never get, like, it just takes one, man, and the house of cards is going to get toppled. So the moment that a current, you know, Hall of Fame tier player gets caught gambling, but he says, oh, I did it legally, and I only bet on my team to win, or only bet on my own performances, that's where the double-edged sword comes in my eyes. So it's not going to happen anytime soon, in my opinion, which really, really stinks. If it were up to me, Pete Rose would be in the Hall of Fame, but I see why he is not.
My take is almost the exact same. I love Pete Rose. I admire Pete Rose as a player. Obviously, the number one rule in baseball is don't bet on the game. I mean, they read that to all the players, all the coaches. They actually have to read it before the minor league season starts. It's a rule that they have to read. What is the rule again? I forget, Don.
The actual number is, I do not know.
Yes, six, whatever. I mean, whatever the rule is, they have to read the rule. It's like a couple of paragraphs long, and that even before minor league season. So it's really ingrained in the players' heads. No betting on baseball. That is a big, big no-no. And so with that said, the integrity of game part of this whole discussion, it needs to be upheld, this ruling, I think. But at the same time, I love Pete Rose. Maybe make an exception at some point. But, you know, like you said, I mean, you start opening up a double-edged sword, and now gambling's easier than ever. you hear horror stories, right, in other mm-hmm. sports. So I just, you don't want that to creep into baseball for sure.
I agree. Now, our final Mailbag Monday question comes from Pitchers and Pitchers, the Twitter account on social media. We talked about last week the window being open till 2024 with the guys you have that are arbitration eligible and the way things work with free agency as it stands right now. But he or she makes a great point, saying that last week you discussed the three-year window. They've made the playoffs 4 years in a row, and they missed 2017 by just one game. So in essence, they've made the playoffs for eight consecutive years as eight consecutive contending teams here in Milwaukee, which is downright incredible. The minor league system is getting better as well. So having said all of this, do you think it's possible that Stearns and company have found a way to avoid the lengthy non-competitive rebuilds that we've seen in the past? One thing I thought of with this, and I don't have a ton to add to it because rebuilding is a weird word for a small market team, given, I think, you know, in 2018, they were certainly peaking early, if you can visualize that. I mean, Josh Hader wasn't even the full-time closer. You had Jeffress. Brandon Woodruff was just a rookie on that team. It's funny to look back at that roster, and they had to get so creative because of injuries in the postseason. Now you see this vision of what it was supposed to be when Stearns took over, of an actual wide-open window. And when you're competitive, it keeps you around longer. I think simply, you know, teams can see, oh, wow, they're winning. They're doing a great job. They're developing pitching with, you look at the Cy Young of Corbin Burns, of course. More and more guys are going to want to come here, and the Christian Yelich deal is going to keep these guys afloat for a long time, of making it clear, like, hey, we want to compete while we have this guy in his prime.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that they have a recipe. I agree with what you said. I think they do have a recipe to continue to keep that the rebuild, you know, word off of their plate for some time. I think they're legit World Series contenders for the next 3 years. We talked about that, obviously, with Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff and some of these pitchers under contract until they become free agents. What it looks like after that is kind of the question, but they need some more arms in order to continue this run at the playoffs. If they expand the playoff route, this is what's going to be really interesting, Dom, and I really don't have an answer for it. If they do expand the playoffs after this lockout, if the rules do change with the CBA, I'm just curious what it's going to look like for teams that want to rebuild. You know, is it easier to rebuild then? Because more teams are going to be going for playoffs, right? So now all of a sudden they're going to be trading those top prospects in their organization for a rental or a guy with a year and a half left to control or something like that. So we may see more of that, especially with the possibility of expanded playoffs. But with the Brewers, man, I think they've got a really good thing going from the top down in their organization. I think what people need to understand is they just have a really, really good organization at this point. It's like the Oakland A's. It's like the Tampa Bay Rays, smaller market teams that just continue to churn out talent and continue to develop talent. And we had Charlie – well, we're going to – I'm sorry, ruining the tease, but we're going to have Charlie Green. He's going to talk about that a little bit. And he's one of those guys that keeps the organization afloat, keeps the organization on that elite level because they are just so good at developing talent and developing players. And that's why those guys in that whole in your minor leagues is the backbone of your organization. That's been a cliche for decades, but it is really true. And the Brewers have a really good backbone.
Yeah, you took my final point, saying like this is becoming their reputation of
right.
You're not going to tear it all down. They've got enough creative resources and a great player development system that they can keep things going organically while it may be lean for a year or two. That things would then develop into a positive, which is where we're at right now. Before we get into the hall, oh, go ahead.
Dom, I do want to just add one point. I don't want to get long-winded about this. So let me just say, with teams like the Rays, like the A's, like the Brewers, they have to rely on their minor league system. So let's say the Yankees don't have as much patience with a guy from AAA with some talent, with some upside that the Brewers, A's, or Rays might have. And you saw this from the A's for a number of years, well before kind of any other team started to do it, but they would take guys from AAA and say, hey, man, we need you to help. And all of a sudden these guys would develop in the big leagues because they needed them to. So at the end of the day, the Brewers are doing that similar to, like I said, the Rays. So that is the last piece of development, is developing in the big leagues. And the Brewers are a team that has to have those guys and have patience for those guys to develop.
Yeah, I agree. Before we get to the next half of our segments, Chiefs win, by the way. Patrick Mahomes touchdown 4 minutes into overtime. 42-36, the final for the Chiefs. So shout out to Mahomes. He had 13 seconds to tie the game up, and they did. That's crazy. Absolutely bonkers. Can't wait to watch the highlights. But also, we got to tell you about Built Bar, of course, here in the new year. You didn't get away from Built Bar, man. It's 100% real chocolate, 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. It's the protein bar that actually tastes like a candy bar, and it's maybe even better than a candy bar. It makes it easy to stick to your New Year's resolution, as here we are at the end of January. Keep it up, man. I see you. The gym is busy where I go, and I appreciate everyone going through it and going through the hard work and hearing the dog days of January. It's like, all right, you got to set in this habit now. Make it a routine, right? But Built Bar can make it easier, too, because it's a protein bar that doesn't taste like a chemical spill. The flavors are incredible. Coconut almond, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, mint brownie, so many more. In fact, Built Bar is always coming out with new and limited time flavors as well, and you can see all of them at built.com to see what's new. The offer that we have for you, you've heard it all season long, locked15 at built.com. That's BUILT.com, and use the promo code locked15, locked15, and you're going to get 15% off your order at built.com. Okay, let's get into the Hall of Fame preview here in the second half of our episode. Vinny, I know you had questions about the Hall of Fame, so let me just break it down as layman's terms as possible of what the Hall of Fame voting process is for the main ballot, okay? So basically, the Baseball Writers Association of America, the BBWAA, is the association that you see, are the only ones who vote on Hall of Famers, okay? No coaches, no other media like broadcasters or, you know, television reporters. There are no scouts, there are no executives, just the people who cover the game. That way it keeps it unbiased from a team perspective and things like that. Now, you have to be active at least 10 years to even earn a vote. It can only vote if you've been active in the last 10 years. So that's how they keep things relevant with the current age of baseball. Okay, so only writers are voting that are members of the Baseball Writers Association of America. Now, filling out your ballot, you can only fill out a maximum of 10 players. You do not have to vote for a single player, as you may have seen headlines the last couple of years of people choosing to abstain from voting by not even sending in a vote or choosing to do a blank ballot. You do not have to put a single person on your ballot. You just have a maximum of 10 people eligible on your ballot to go to the Hall of Fame. Now, in order to be elected into the Hall of Fame, that player has to be on 75% of the submitted ballots, which, quite frankly, is the hardest Hall of Fame to get into in all of the 4 professional sports. So it's quite an achievement to get into the Hall of Fame as a player. The caveat to 75% is that you get 10 years on the ballot to achieve 75%. However, if you ever have a year that you fall below 5%, that you are taken off of the ballot and you cannot be voted into the Hall of Fame the traditional way by the Baseball Writers Association of America. So again, let me repeat that. You get 10 years to eventually get 75% of the ballot for your given year that you earn that majority. But if you ever have less than 5% turnout, you are off the ballot, basically saying you're not going to be a Hall of Famer. So I'm going to explain things through this year's ballot with a great tracker. Ryan Thibodeau does an amazing job, Baseball Hall of Fame tracker on Twitter. He keeps a public Google sheet open all year long, basically showing the known public ballots, keeps track of it all so you can see how guys are trending toward making it to the Hall of Fame if they're going to be over 75% when the announcement comes. And again, the announcement is coming on Tuesday of when, so if you're listening to this on Monday, tomorrow night, Tuesday the 25th on MLB Network at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. So just keep an eye out for that tomorrow night. Voting is, this is probably the most important thing that I have to mention in accordance with this year's ballot, okay? This is straight from the Baseball Hall of Fame, their rules for how voting shall be conducted. Voting shall be based upon the player's record, playing ability, integrity, sportsmanship, character, and contributions to the teams in which they played. There's a lot to unpack there, Vinny, but do you have any questions before we get into this year's ballot?
Well, knowing that, I need to adjust my ballot a little bit, what you just said about integrity. But
right, I know that's where it gets wild, right?
Some of the names that, yeah. So is that new then, these criteria to get in, or that's always been?
It's always been, but it's okay. Up to the riders to decide, right? So that's gotcha. Where, you know, what's steroid use in the late 90s compared to steroid use in the late 2000s, right? When it wasn't illegal in the late 90s, but, you know, it was very prevalent, obviously, whereas there was actually Players Association testing approved in the late 2000s, and players who failed those tests tend to not have as friendly of public opinion as opposed to the guys in the late 90s, i.e. the Roger Clemens or the Barry Bonds or the Sammy Sosas. But we'll get into Sammy in a little bit too, but that's where that's, I think, really important to this year's ballot.
Yeah, okay. My main question is this. Why, so if I were running things, and that makes perfect sense, are all the rules you laid out, but why do some guys, okay, so let me just back up. If I were running, making, if it were Vinny's world, and this is how I would set up the voting, it would be, okay, once you're eligible, are you a Hall of Famer? Are you good enough? Yes or no? If it's no, and you're under 75%, it's no, you're not on the ballot anymore.
Just one time.
Well, see, so this is my question. Why do some riders, it's more about the riders. Why do some riders vote no for 9 years in a row, and then that last final year that the guy's on the ballot, they vote and they change their vote and vote yes? That doesn't make sense to me. And all of a sudden the guy shoots up. So every year, some guy, you see this every year, guys shoot up their voting percentage until they're in the Hall of Fame. That doesn't make sense to me.
I get exactly what you're saying, but that's where the 5% rule comes in. With only being able to vote for 10 guys in a crowded ballot, this year is what's considered a crowded ballot. You have multiple guys that are in their final year of eligibility, you know, the big names like Barry Bonds, the big names like Roger Clemens, Curt Schilling, that you would think, all right, a lot of people are going to use their votes on those, you know, 3-4 guys. Then you've got some obvious first-timers like David Ortiz, so that's another vote. So you essentially only have 5 votes to pick for the rest of the guys. So then guys like Gary Sheffield get pinched. Scott Rowland get pinched. Todd Helton get pinched of that. He's just on the fringe. And when there's no urgency for a guy that's on the fringe, they tend to leave him off the ballot because they want to make sure they get their guys in. That's where it comes down to. And there's a lot of that in this year's ballot.
That makes sense. Okay. So the fact that maybe a writer all of a sudden just isn't on a whim changing his vote, it's correct. Just perhaps there's a crowded ballot. That makes sense. Okay.
And you'll also see for guys first year on the ballot, some writers will choose to make sure they put a guy that maybe instantly in public opinion, like, wait, that guy's not a Hall of Famer, off to the naked eye. But then in years go on, they realize, oh, he really is. I look at most recently Larry Walker. It took him 10 years to get into the freaking Hall of Fame. Everyone just said, oh, Coors. He played at Coors. Blah, blah. Look, he was one of the best hitters of his generation. And yes, Coors, but we have all these advanced metrics that help adjust park factors. And he was one of the best hitters, regardless of ballpark. Yes, the home and away splits were different, but he can't help it that he played at altitude. He can't help that. So I'm really happy Larry Walker got in, but that's what happens, right? So when you have the urgency, this is a guy's last year on the ballot, it's now or never. And that's when you get the truest vote of like, all right, I actually do think this guy's a Hall of Famer. Makes sense. We're running long, as we usually do. But I just want to quickly go through the actual ballot. Then we'll take a quick break and then reveal our ballots, okay? So it's an alphabetical order every year, okay? Bobby Abreu is currently tracking as to stay on the ballot. This is his third year on the ballot. Barry Bonds, this is his final year on the ballot. Probably not going to make it in this year. He's currently at 77%, but you always expect a drop once the actual non-public ballots are voted in. Mark Burley in his second year on the ballot. It's going to be close if he stays on. He's right at 5% right now. Roger Clemens in his final year on the ballot, almost identical to Barry Bonds' situation. Carl Crawford, first year on the ballot, hasn't received a single vote. Prince Fielder, unfortunately, his first year on the ballot, has not received a single public vote, so he's out. Todd Helton is probably going to stick around. This is his fourth year on the ballot. He won't get in this year. Ryan Howard, first year. He won't make it. Tim Hudson, first year. He won't make it. Torrey Hunter, first year. He won't make it. Andrew Jones should be a Hall of Famer, and I am so mad that he's not a Hall of Famer, but it's his fifth year on the ballot. He's currently tracking about 50%, but it goes back to your point. If this guy's clearly Hall of Famer, why hasn't he been voted? We'll get into that a little bit, but he will stay on the ballot for next year. Jeff Kent is in his ninth year on the ballot. He's at 31%. And sorry, something's playing in my ear. But 31% for Jeff Kent this year, and he has the most home runs of a second baseman. Like, come on, what are we waiting for? Jeff Kent should be on. He'll survive. He'll probably get in next year with the 10th-year bump. Tim Lincecum, first year on the ballot, probably going to miss out. Justin Morneau hasn't got a single vote, first year on the ballot. Joe Nathan, you feel for Joe Nathan because he became a closer later in his career, and it probably hurt him. He's probably not going to stick around on the ballot. David Ortiz, first year on the ballot, probably going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. In my opinion, he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Jonathan Papelbon, first year on the ballot, probably won't make it. Jake Peavy, definitely will not make it, first year on the ballot. Andy Pettit, fourth year on the ballot, he's hanging around, but he probably won't be a Hall of Famer anytime soon. AJ Pierzynski, first year on the ballot, not going to make it. Manny Ramirez, one of the controversial ones, it's his sixth year on the ballot, he will remain for next year, he won't make it this year. Alex Rodriguez, another controversial one, it's his first year on the ballot. He's at 40% right now, which is very interesting for the public ballots. Scott Rolen has got a ton of support this year. He's fifth year on the ballot. He's going to be close if he makes it this year or not. It doesn't look like it this year, but maybe next. He's at 70% right now. Jimmy Rollins has got a little bit of crowd support. He's going to stay on the ballot for next year, but he won't make it in this year. This is his first year on the ballot. Few more. Stay with me. Curt Schilling in his final year on the ballot, 61% of the vote currently. This is going to be a really, really, really tough one to pick when you talk about character, as we talk about those rules. Gary Sheffield, his eighth year on the ballot, so he'll survive for another year, but he's getting a lot of support lately, so he's at 46%. Sammy Sosa's final year on the ballot, but he's only at 25% right now, so he looks like he's going to fall off. Mark Teixeira's first year on the ballot, he won't make it. Omar Vizquel, a lot of controversy around him, not for steroids, but for far, far worse reasons. He is going to be falling off the ballot pretty soon. This is his fifth year on the ballot. And Billy Wagner, he's gaining support, probably won't make it this year. It's his seventh year on the ballot. He's at 49% right now. Okay, that was a lot. I want you to digest all those names. Think about it for a second. I'm going to tell you about Bet Online, and when we come back, we're going to tell you our ballots. Okay, Bet Online is going to wish you a happy betting new year. What a crazy game last night. I mean, we're doing the podcast, and I have one eye on Twitter saying Patrick Mahomes is a god. You can bet on all these football games as we head into championship weekend on Bet Online, the number one spot for all the sports wagering action in 2022. New year, new website. You can sign up today, and you get a 50% welcome bonus with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's how you get started. Bet Online, use the promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, and you'll get a 50% welcome. They've got football, basketball, hockey, combat sports, Vegas casino games, you name it, they've got it. Take advantage of all of their amazing offers at Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. Bet Online, where the game starts. Okay, Vinny, I've been talking for a long time. I just threw a million names at everybody. Is there any points you want to make about this year's ballot before we reveal ours?
No, I think we should just get into it. I find this discussion absolutely fascinating, and we talked about it off camera too. Like, I again, 2 decades into the game, and I really don't know how Hall of Fame voting works, and now I do, and thank you for that, Dom. And it's very interesting. You probably estimated that a lot of fans, or we both estimated, a lot of fans are probably in the same boat with where I was, and now you've enlightened us. Thank you.
That's what I'm here for. Yeah, do you want to start, or do you want me to start?
No, I want you to go.
Okay. So mine is a little off the beaten path. I'll show it here for folks on YouTube as I list it out here as well. I actually voted for Bobby Abreu if I had a vote. I don't actually vote for the Baseball Writers Association of America. I would vote for Bobby Abreu, Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, David Ortiz, Scott Rolen, Jimmy Rollins, Curt Schilling, and Billy Wagner. I used all 10 of my votes available. If I were voting this year, that's how I would spend all 10 of my votes. And I can explain if you want to reveal yours right now, or do you want me to explain?
Let me reveal mine, and then we'll just kind of maybe discuss the differences or okay. Maybe some of the...
Go for it.
Okay, yeah. I got Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Andrew Jones, David Ortiz. I left Jeff Kent off. I did. Maybe I should rethink that. But these are the best 10 players I thought were Hall of Famers compared to the rest. It is a crowded ballot for certain. Mm-hmm. So then I have Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Curt Schilling, Gary Sheffield, Sammy Sosa. I put Omar Vizquel in there, but I had no idea what happened with him. I just Googled it. So maybe, again, understanding that integrity is part of the vote, perhaps I would leave him off as well and put Jeff Kent in there. But, yeah, let's dive into it a little bit.
So, let's see. Did you use all 10 or did you use 9? Or no, I count 10 now. Okay.
10.
Yep,
got 10.
Used all 10. Let's start with the Jeff Kent case, since that was one of the biggest differences between you and I. Look, Jeff Kent won an MVP. He protected Barry Bonds in a lineup. He was a four-time Silver Slugger. He has 377 home runs as a second baseman, nearly 2,500 hits, and a career 500 slugging. I know people want to complain about his defense, but look, the dude has the most homers as second baseman. He was a tremendous player. He probably won't make it this year, but I think in the 10th year of the ballot, he'll get in.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at his numbers. If you go purely numbers, I mean, he beats Ryan Sandberg on a number of categories, does he not? Right. So, I mean, it's an 855 OPS. It's a 123 OPS plus. This is a Hall of Famer. There is very, very strong numbers, and he's playing in a ballpark that was not hitter friendly.
Correct.
In San Francisco. So, and like you said, protecting Barry Bonds. Now it does help when you do have Barry Bonds on first base every single time you're up, right? I mean, pitchers are going to give you more pitches to hit, but look, the guy got it done. Let me just say real quick about Jeff Kent. I heard that he hated baseball. I don't know if that was true, but
that's funny.
It was like a job to him, and he was really, really good at it.
Oh, well, shout out to Berkeley. Okay, shout out back the pack. Where we differed also, you had Manny Ramirez and Alex Rodriguez and Sammy Sosa. Care to elaborate on, you know, obviously the steroids things? I don't want to get into a big soapbox discussion here at the end of the episode about steroids, but you decided to have these guys of that era in. What makes you think that?
Yeah, so they all were on steroids. That's kind of my argument to this. And they were the best players of that era when everyone was on steroids. And I got to say this, like, I mean, maybe I'll get some flack for this. I don't know, but I'll just say this. I want to be truthful. I'm glad they started testing my first year in pro ball. Now, I was born and raised by very good parents that taught me very good morals and values and stuff like that. So I'd like to think that I wouldn't have been tempted to take steroids if I played in that era. But you see all your buddies going up to the big leagues from AAA and making millions and millions of dollars, and they were not testing. And then all of a sudden they kind of were testing, but, you know, I don't know. It was a weird time for the game, I'll say. And looking back and watching some of these games on ESPN Classic, is that even a channel anymore, by the way?
Not anymore, but you can get it on ESPN Plus. There's a lot of classic games on ESPN Plus.
Watch one of those games from the early 2000s, late 90s. My goodness, they look like they all are on steroids. Mm-hmm. They look huge. And so, you know, not to say that that's an excuse in any way, and it's not, it really isn't, but at the same time, like, everyone was on them. These guys are the best players in that era. They're really good players, steroids or not. So I don't know. That's my argument. I hate the fact that they all cheated. I absolutely hated it. So
I'm going to stay away from the cheating side, because everyone's written something about it getting on a soapbox. I don't want to be the next guy in line, because I only put Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens in mine, just because at the time that they did it, it wasn't technically tested for yet. So I give them the benefit of the doubt there, given everybody else was doing it, as you said, in the late 90s as well. But three guys I want to point out real quick, and we'll get ready to wrap up after this. I voted for Bobby Abreu. He's not going to get in this year. A lot of people just kind of scoff, like, oh, Bobby Abreu, he's not a Hall of Famer. You probably thought that while watching him throughout his career. He got hurt by bouncing around by a lot of teams. But I want to just show you these numbers, okay? This is insane. I did this test with a bunch of my broadcaster buddies, okay? I did a blind resume. It's my favorite thing about this time of year. Player A versus Player B. Player A, 291 average, a 395 on-base percentage, 2,400 hits, 574 doubles, 400 stolen bases. Player B, 338 batting average, but a 388 on base, so worse on base, but better batting average. More hits with 3,100 hits. He had slightly fewer doubles. He had more triples, fewer homers, and fewer stolen bases. Player A is Bobby Abreu, and Player B is Tony Gwynn. Now, it doesn't exist in a vacuum, obviously. Tony Gwynn, one of the best hitters of all time, over 3,000 hits, .338 batting average, six-time batting champ. I get that. Bobby Abreu put together an incredible career, especially coming from Venezuela. Yes, he bounced around from team to team. Nearly 2,500 hits, nearly 300 homers. Great defender in the outfield and a better on-base percentage than Tony Gwynn. He should get more consideration as one of the most underrated players of the 2000s. My second player that I want to bring up real quick as well is Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy Rollins, you can make a bunch of different stats for guys to make them fit your narrative. It's his first year on the ballot. He's not going to win, but he's going to stay on the ballot for next year. MVP, four-time Gold Glove, 200 homers and 400 stolen bases as a shortstop. He has the most hits in Philadelphia Phillies history. Let me repeat that. The most hits in Philadelphia Phillies history. That should be worth something. And he's also led the league in triples four times in his career. He was a dynamic player and one of the best shortstops, in my opinion, in an era that was dominated by hulking dudes. He was this undersized, all fields type player and a switch hitting shortstop. I think he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. And lastly, Billy Wagner. I think people forget how dominant Billy Wagner was. Some of his numbers are better than Mariano Rivera. He has 422 saves in his career. That's sixth most all time. Seven-time All-Star. He had a career whip under one. Think about that. Career whip under one, 998. Just barely, but it's still under one. And he has the best strikeouts per nine inning rate of all time of 11.92. He averaged 12 strikeouts per nine innings. And he has the most strikeouts in the ninth inning of anybody in Major League Baseball history. Yes, it's hard for a reliever to get in, but I think Billy Wagner is a Hall of Famer.
Man, you make some really good points about
it's
all three
so
of those
It's so hard,
guys.
Man. It's really hard.
Really hard. What about Scott Rolen?
I put Scott Rolen on mine. There's a lot of pieces out there. One of the most criminally underrated defensive third baseman of all time. He's definitely top five, depending on who you ask. He did enough with the bat, in my opinion. He was a Rookie of the Year, seven-time All-Star. He won a Silver Slugger. He won a World Series. He got over 2,000 hits. He had over 300 homers, which, you know, most people think, oh, 500, you're automatically in. But different. He wasn't really a power type, per se. But his 8 years of war were the best in baseball from 1997 to 2004.
Wow.
I mean, that's pretty darn good.
And people don't understand how hard third base is. Third base is not. So when people say, oh, you just stick him in a corner, I think third base needs to be not in that conversation. I think that is designated to first base, left and right field. I think third base is an incredibly hard position to play, and he played it exceptionally well. So, yeah, I mean, looking at his numbers, I mean, he probably is a Hall of Famer at the end of the day. I want to just really quick point out Prince Fielder, right? I mean, yeah. He's 37 still. You know, if he would have finished up his career and continued to do what he was doing, I mean, maybe first ballot.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, he had the fourth most homers in his peak, only behind Albert Pujols and Miggy. And Ryan Howard, and then Gary Sheffield could get in. Of course, he started his career in Milwaukee. We don't talk about how he left Milwaukee, but Sheffield, he's going to make it into the next 2 years. Probably not this year, but you know, over 500 homers, I think he should be in. I know he's involved with Balco and the allegations that come with that. I think he should be in. I really do. But dude, whoa, this has been a hell of an episode. We watched the crazy overtime game. We talked about the Hall of Fame. And tomorrow we've got an incredible guest. Charlie Green, minor league field coordinator, will be joining us tomorrow for Interrogation Tuesday. A really fun interview that we taped last week with him. Big week plan, though. We got that tomorrow. We'll probably have a Hall of Fame reaction for Wednesday morning. Then we'll have our Throwback Thursday series continue with games number 8 and 7 on Thursday.
That's it. Yeah, no, I mean, it's an exciting week. It's always a fun week. I love this show. I love doing this podcast with you, Dom. Really appreciate all the listeners. Appreciate everybody that's subscribing on YouTube. That really does help us out, so please continue to do that. Thanks.
Yeah, and check out your new Coach's Corner on there as well. Yeah. And if you want to send in videos, send them in to us on Twitter. He's at Vinny Rattino, all one word. I'm Dom_Catronio. You can DM them to us. You can send them to us on Instagram. Same handles there. We'd love to see him, and Vinny's going to break it down and make them, you know, the next Prince Fielder.
That's right. That's right. Send him in. I got the technology side of it figured out a little bit better, and we will, they're fun to do. So send him in.
Fantastic. Well, he's Vinny Rutino. I'm Dominic Catronio. Thanks for sticking around this long on the Hall of Fame extravaganza along with Mailbag Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. Charlie Green joins us tomorrow for Interrogation Tuesday. And thanks again for making us your first listen of the day. Like, subscribe, tell your friends, leave a rating if you're so inclined, if you think we're doing a good or bad job. Thanks for listening, and we will see you tomorrow.
You are Locked On Brewers, your daily Milwaukee Brewers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.